We're doing part two in the new series, Halachos for Professionals, and or Workplace for Halachos. So the previous year we talked about stealing, and today we're going to talk about something that's related to stealing, and that is using things that belong to other people without their permission. So the Shulchan Aruch says like this, and also taking things, as we'll see. This is Choshen Mishpat Simen Shin Nun Tes Sif Aleph. Asur Ligzol Olashok Afilu Kolshu. Wait, one may not steal Ligzol or Oshek. What's the difference between Gazel and Oshek? It's actually Parsha Sashavua. Lo Sashok. So Oshek is when I deny something that's owed that I owe to somebody else. So, for example, if you work for me and I refuse to pay you, that would be oshek. Or if you borrow money from me and I refuse to return it to you, that would be oshek. I haven't actually physically taken something that belongs to you, but I refuse to give you something that's due to you. So the halacha is one may not do gazel or oshek, even a kolshu, even a minute amount. Bein Yisrael, Bein me'al v'kohavim, one may not steal, neither from a Jew nor a non-Jew. V'imu davar deleka man dekapit bay. What about if it's something that nobody cares about? It's such a small thing that nobody minds if you take it. So then, shari, it's permitted. Kigon, lito mehachavila, o mehageder, lachtos boshinav. This is an example of something that's, I guess we probably don't think of this example anymore, but let's say you have a fence, a wooden fence around your farm, and I have something stuck in my tooth, so I could use a toothpick. I need a toothpick to get it out of my... So I go ahead and I take a splinter from your picket fence. Now, does anyone care about that, if I take a splinter from their picket fence? Nobody cares, presumably. So that is mutter. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Even though I stole it, right? And you're right, it's not worth anything. It's worth less than a shavar pruta, but usually you're not allowed to steal less than a shavar pruta either. But if you steal something that nobody cares about, like a splinter from the fence, so then it's mutter. V'avze aser b'yushalmi memidas chasidus. However, the Yerushalmi says that Mimidas Chasidus, one should avoid that. What's wrong? Why is there this Midas Chasidus? So the Aruch HaShulchan suggests that the reason is Dim Kol Echad Yasekein Yisteru HaGeder. Let's say everybody did this. It's true. He doesn't care if one person did this, but everybody took advantage of this leniency and started taking toothpicks from this guy's fence. So his fence would eventually fall apart. It would get ruined. And therefore, if this is something that if everybody did it, it would be a problem, then there's a midas chasidus not to do it. But mikradin, it's mutter. So that's the first halacha. Let me give a practical example. Your roommate has a box of tissues. So, or your coworker at work, they bring in a box of tissues from home. Can you, you just sneezed. Can you take a tissue? What do you think?
You never
ask them. No. No, you think no. Ah, mazel tov. We'll ask Eliza since she didn't hear. Here's the question. Your coworker has a box of tissues on her desk. She's out for the day. And you sneeze, you need a tissue, you take her tissue. So you thought no. Eliza, what do you think? No, she brought it in from home. These are Puffs Plus with lotion. The office ones, the office ones are like, you know, the knockoff brand. So what do you say? Probably not. Everybody's saying no. So I would have thought yes. So Midas Chasidus, okay, good. Exactly. In other words, that's what I would have thought is exactly the case of the Shulchan Aruch. I would have thought nobody minds if you take a tissue. Or, not no, okay, so maybe it's wrong. But I can reasonably assume, with a high degree of confidence, obviously if I'm unsure, I can't do it, right? Safik d'oraisa l'chumrah. You're not allowed to steal. That's an iser in the Torah. If you're unsure, you can't steal. But I would have thought, maybe I'm wrong, I would have thought that almost nobody cares if you take a single tissue. So therefore, it's mutter to take the tissue. I also agree with what you said, which is it's a midas chasidus not to take the tissue. Because if everybody took one tissue, then within a couple of hours, her box of tissues would be open and empty. And she brought it in, so she didn't have to use the office tissues. She wanted puff plus with lotion. So that being the case, I would think that that's the halacha. It's mutter, but it's midas chasidus not to. Now, you disagreed with me. Is that because you think people are makbid? Like they would mind?
That's because I feel like, let's say if someone would say, like, okay, I have tissue, I don't need anything to say anything back.
Right.
But I don't think most people, let's say they buy a box of tissues and they came back and saw that, a bunch of people speaking without asking them, they'd be annoyed.
Maybe, but the question is, would they be makbid about your taking this one tissue? So then, if you're right, then you're right, and I'm wrong. In other words, maybe my assessment of the mitzvahs is wrong. I was assuming people are more generous than you're assuming.
I don't think anyone would say it.
No, I agree. But even if you asked and they would say yes, but the question is, would they be makbid if you took without asking? So I was assuming. And I was assuming that most people would not be makbid. I would assume that nobody cares if you take a tissue. Even though they would be upset if their whole box is gone. And that's why it's a midas chasidus not to take, but it's mutter to take. And therefore, if your nose is, if it's shas adchak, you're getting dirty, so then you could be makel on a midas chasidus. But that's what I would think. I would think it's mutter without midas chasidus. But again, I'm only saying that because my assessment of people's feelings, which might be wrong, is that that nobody or almost nobody would mind. Yeah, you had a question. Okay. So the question is, someone leaves their tissue box on the desk, you're saying that's a good indication that they're happy if anybody else takes, right? And obviously we would all agree that if you see somebody else's tissue box hidden under their desk, that you couldn't take it. Okay. But again, what the halacha theoretically is clear. The only question is, what's the mitzias? And I don't know, we'll have to take a poll. Okay. Yes. Yes, we'll get let's see if we get there. Yes.
So the tissues, let's say I would say generally that I could take tissues, people wouldn't care about them, but I happen to know my friend's more stingy.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you think they will mind, or you're even uncertain if they may mind, then you absolutely may not take. Yeah. If they would mind if you took without asking.
But I don't think that people would mind if you took a tissue. I think that most people would just prefer to ask.
Okay, but they're not here today. They're out at lunch, or they're in the bathroom, and right now you need the tissue. That's our question. You're right. If they're here, you could ask, or you could hint, or something like that. But I think the question that we're wondering about is, what if they're not around? They're not at their desk. No. That's, I think, the point. Unless you're highly confident that they wouldn't mind, then you shouldn't take it. You should not steal misafig. Maybe they won't mind. So it's only mutter if you can assume with a high degree of confidence that they wouldn't mind. As the Shulchan Aruch said, imhu davar deleka man dekapid beishari. If it's something that nobody cares about, it's mutter. Like the example of picking the toothpick off of the fence.
So, the defining factor would be, if the person came back, mm-hmm. while I'm in the middle of taking it, would I be embarrassed? Mm-hmm. So if the answer is absolutely not, so then take it. But I feel like most people in the act of taking something that they're like, oh, it's negligible, a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Again, in the end of the day, it's totally on whether you're confident that they're not makbid. If the answer is I'm confident that they're not makbid, it's mutter. If you're uncertain, then it's asr. Okay. Yes? We'll get there. Okay. Oh, well, let's talk about that. The answer basically is it's the same halacha, meaning to say that shoel shlo midas is a ganav. If you borrow somebody else's property and use it, if I borrow somebody's basketball or pen or the like, then without their permission, that too is a form of theft. You may not borrow things without people's permission. But here too, we say the same halacha. If I am confident that they don't mind, so then it's mutter. So if I go ahead and I know the... My next door neighbor has a basketball in that they keep in their backyard. And I know every time I ask them to borrow it, they say, of course, and they're so happy about it. And I know for sure, I know that they wouldn't mind if I went and borrowed their ball for a half hour and used it. So then I could borrow it without permission. It's the same thing, because we know that any time somebody isn't makbid, and I'm confident they're not makbid, either because nobody's makbid about this, like in a tissue case, or probably, or because I know them and they're not makbid, so then it's okay. If I'm unsure, then I may not take this. So, you know, I don't know if you should use your roommate's toothbrush without asking permission, because for some reason they might be makbid, even if you wash it afterwards. But if it's your roommate's mug, so you could. Now, what difference does it make? You wash them both? I don't know, but for some reason people don't like to share toothbrushes. So therefore, you could probably, I think you could probably borrow a roommate's mug without asking permission, but you shouldn't borrow a toothbrush. So that's the halacha. The same thing is true with respect to borrowing as well as with respect to taking. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch says, Afilu hu besakanas maves, v'tzarech ligzol es chavero kedei lahatzil nafsho, tzarech shelo yikachanu, ela aldas l'shalem. Now this is a fascinating thing. There's an opinion in Rashi. Rashi's view is that you might not even be able to steal in order to save your life. If you want to know how severe stealing is, right? You're allowed to eat nevelos and trefos and do all the averos in the Torah except for the big three. Even chilul Shabbos to save your life. But according to Rashi, you might not even be able to steal to save your life because you have no rishus to take that which isn't yours. However, we don't paskin like Rashi, we paskin like Tosfos, we paskin you may steal to save your life or to save somebody else's life. However, only if you take it with the intention to pay it back or to return it. Afilu alokeach b'she'ela, shalom idas bailam, nikra gazlan, as we said, even borrowing without permission is a form of theft. Ezehu oshek, ze sheba mamun chaver letoch yado, biratzon haba'alim. Vekevan shetavu, kavash mamun bechazaka, velo echziro. Like we said, oshek is not paying back money that you owe, like refusing to pay a debt, or refusing to pay an employee, or the like. Now the Aruch HaShulchan adds an interesting halach, an interesting point. Number one, let's say you know that if you ask somebody to borrow something or to have something, they will certainly say yes. But you also know that they're not happy to say yes. So then it's not right to ask. Even if they're going to say yes, you shouldn't put somebody in a situation where they'll feel pressure to give you something that they don't really want to give you. Or take something that they don't really want you to take. You know, you're at a bris, friend's bris, and you see, wow, you know, such good whitefish sandwiches. Maybe I'll take home six for my whole family for supper, right? So So I think one can assume, you know, if it's at the end of the bris and like they're going to throw everything out in a minute, so then that's probably okay. You could be assured that they'd be very happy for you to take. But if it's at the beginning, so I don't think that would be right. You're taking something from somebody, even if they give you permission, right? You ask them, oh, is it okay if I bring home supper for my family? So he's going to say, yeah. Well, of course, my kids love whitefish. It's almost as good as herring. So I would think over there that that's wrong. Yes? Rashi.
Like, yeah, you said that Rashi would mention that.
Oh,
that, like, Even though we don't have a possible.
No, it wouldn't. If you, perhaps Rashi would agree, if you knew that he wouldn't mind, which might be a reasonable assumption, then it would be okay. But fundamentally, we don't necessarily waive Gazel. There's a whole story in the Gemara about this, in Bava Kamma, about David HaMelech and the like. So again, we don't accept that, but I think it shows you that gazel, in a sense, is different. The reason why I can't steal is not just because it's an avera, it's a lav. If that's all that it was, so then I would be able to violate the lav to save my life, or to save somebody else's life, just like I could be Mechal Shabbos. The Torah says, v'chai bohem. But I fundamentally don't have reshus to their nechasim. I'm not entitled to it. So as I said, we don't. Shulchan Aruch definitively does not pass in that way. Yeah. I would think it's probably not the best thing. Yes. Again, it's not stealing if they offered it, but I think that if you don't think that they want to give it to you, belave shalem, so then it's better to say no. And sometimes you don't really have a choice. In other words, they're like, you know, forcing you to take it. Okay, fine. But if you can decline, it's better to decline or not put them in a situation where they feel compelled to offer you something that they don't really want to give you. Yes?
What if there's a case where something's being given out for free, and there's probably a certain assumption that I don't know if it's a certain amount? Is it hard to take more? Or let's say, like, you know, someone's not taking more.
Yeah, so I think the answer is it depends. If somebody is giving it out, in other words, I go ahead and, you know, somebody is making a simcha and he's giving out ragalach. And he puts out ragalach and he says, please, everyone take. So in that case, again, I think you could assume that he wants everybody to take one or two or three. If you decide to go take home the whole box so that nobody else is going to get, so that would be wrong. On the other hand, if that's not the situation. You know, there's a, we have the Hefker table in Yeshiva where we'll bring that stuff after our shir. So let's say somebody goes ahead, and in that case, I would think, kol hakodem zacha. And if somebody decides, sees that big tray of ragalach, and he says, wow, I didn't eat supper tonight. Let me have 17 ragalach. So he would have to bench probably on his ragalach, but he could probably take it. I would think kol hakodem zacha. You're not taking anything from anybody that anybody minds. There's a interesting sugya, though not totally relevant, of at what point, if something's hefker, but somebody's about to take it, and you like swipe it out from under them, is that ever wrong? Or they're going fishing? Ani, it's called Ani Hamhapich Becharara, or that's the first case. Or they're going fishing and you sort of go into their territory. And like, it's an interesting, it's a discussion among other places. There's a Tosis in the second book of Baba Basra about that. But generally speaking, I think it depends. I think, again, it depends on whether it's a situation like the first case, where I'm giving out ragalach to celebrate a simcha. So then I think it wouldn't be right for you to take 17 ragalach. Not you, you would never take 17. Whereas something like this, where it's just really totally hefker, and where we would really throw out the ragalach, but we figure, why throw it out? We may as well give it out, give it away. So there, I think that, you know, if you took 17, there's nothing wrong. And even though it means that the guy after you and the guy after you won't have as much to take, I don't think that's okay. That's a problem. If you were Zocha, you were Zocha. Okay. The next halachos in Shulchan Aruch, abetting theft and buying stolen goods. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Asur liknos mehaganav chepet sheganav. If somebody stole something, you may not buy from the thief. V'avon gadolhu, this is a big sin. Sharei machzik yidei ovrei avera. V'gorim lo lignov gnevos acheros, because you are going to incentivize further theft. You're going to cause this guy to steal more. And this is a very important rule when it comes to these types of halachos that we're talking about, which is it's important in general not just to think about whether I could do this or not, but also what are the repercussions? What will this cause? In this case, it's probably usher for two reasons. Number one, as we'll see in a moment, if it's stolen, so it doesn't actually belong to the thief, assuming that the original owners were not yet miyayish. We'll talk about that in a moment. So if it doesn't belong, if I steal something, I steal this lovely packet, and now it doesn't belong to me. If I sell it to you, it doesn't belong to you. There are some times where perhaps it does belong to me. I've stolen something, I might owe the original owners money, but at this point it belongs to me, or at least if I sell it to you, it'll belong to you. For example, there's Yeyosh and Shinoi Rishus, the original owners gave up on getting back their book, and then when I sell it to you, that's a transfer of Rishus after Yeyosh, so then you would actually own it. So then you would not be holding on to stolen property, but still it is wrong, among other things, because again, like we said, by your buying the stolen property, that's going to encourage me to steal more. Well, that's so far we're talking about. You may not buy property or objects that were stolen. Let's just do a couple more halachos, then we'll get there. Okay. Hagonev umachar. We'll skip for a moment before we get back to that to Simon Shin Nun Ches. Kol davar shechezkaso shehu ganov asur likachoso. Anything that's stolen, you may not buy it. In other words, you're going ahead and you're walking down Nicholas Avenue and you see someone selling shoes. I don't know if those are stolen.
One shoe,
right. You see him selling, brand new cameras and other electronic goods, iPhones and other things for a ridiculously low price, $5 per iPhone. So, right, the whole table worth. And he also has a washing machine there, like the guy in front of Rite Aid, or a dryer. Pots, toaster, everything you want. But especially, so most of those things probably aren't stolen. They just take them from the garbage. But there's good reason to suspect that the $5 iPhones are probably stolen. You don't know. Maybe he just found really good sale. Or he found a bunch of iPhones in the garbage. So in that case, it would be usher to buy from him because it's cheskaso shuganov. V'chein im rov oso davar shuganov. Let's say most of this type of item is stolen. But it's this type of thing that you want to buy, at least in this type of venue, is stolen. So you may not buy it. So, for example, the Shulchan Aruch says you may not buy from shepherds wool or milk or goats. Why? Because shepherds don't have wool. What is very likely is that they swiped some wool from the sheep that they were shepherding. They figured the owner will never notice if I take some wool. So therefore they took a little bit of wool or took a little bit of milk or the like. baby goat. So you may not take, you may not buy from them, because it's likely that it was stolen. Fine. So let's say you bought something and it was stolen, but you didn't realize it was stolen. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Hagonev u'machar, the lonis Yahshua bailim, v'achar kach hukar haganav, uvo edim, shezeh chefet shemachar ploni, hu ginavo b'fanein. So I go ahead, I buy this lovely MP3 recording device. I didn't realize it was stolen. There's no reason why I should have been suspicious it was stolen. And then it turns out that it was stolen. So then, chozer hachefetz labailim, so the owners get back this MP3 player, v'habailim nosnin lelokeach damim shenasan leganav, and then the original owners, so let's give an example. Let's say this was stolen for, we'll take this. Okay, so I stole this and I sold it to you, okay, for $5. Great, that's a good deal, a car for $5.
And an apartment.
So, yeah, so okay, so now, obviously, you give it back to her, and you pay her $5. And then, you just lost money. So you then go ahead and sue me for $5. Right? V'habaylim nosnin lo keach damim shenasan leganav. Now why is that? Mipnei takanas hashok. What does takanas hashok mean? For the benefit of the market. What that means is as follows. Really, mikar hadin, of course that isn't true. Mikar hadin, she gets her property back. Why should she lose any money? And you have to find me and get your money back, because I have your money. But that would lead to a situation where commerce would be limited, because everybody would be afraid to buy anything, because maybe it was stolen. And if it was stolen, they'd lose their money. So therefore, they instituted that the original owners have to pay the buyer, and the original owners get their money back from the ganav. Okay. However, if it's a ganav meforsam, what's a ganav meforsam? Someone, everybody knows he's a thief, right? I go around stealing keys all the time. So then, she wouldn't have to pay you. Why? Because you should never have bought from me. So we're not going to make takanos to protect you, the consumer, if the consumer was buying things that people should not have bought in the first place. Now, let's say Nisyashu habaylim me'agneva. Let's say you gave up hope of ever getting back your car before or even after I sold it. So then, kana lokeach b'yeyush v'shinoi rishos. That's the first opinion of the Mechaber. Then you bought it, you get your money back, but you don't get the object back. She gets to keep the object. If there's yeyush and shinoi rishos, and there's a machlokas, whether you first need yeyush and then shinoi rishos, or either way. Okay, so those are some of the basic halachos about buying stolen goods. So let's give some practical examples. Oh, here's an let's say you're at a jewelry store, and this once happened to me. So you're trying to buy some jewelry, and it's a jewelry store that you negotiate. So you say, I say $150, and they say $250, and you say, I'm not going above $175. And then the vendor says, all right, but you have to pay cash and don't tell anybody. So, right, so now there's reason to be suspicious that perhaps they're not supposed to be selling at this price. So in that case, that In that case, you definitely should not buy. Correct. Or let's say you go ahead and somebody who you know works in an electronics store offers to sell you a camera that usually goes for $300 for $100. Right? Again, I think there's very good reason to suspect that this person probably did not licitly get this camera. So one shouldn't buy it without looking into it. Now let's say the following. Let's say my cleaning ladies always get bad reputations. You know, I think 9 out of 10 things that people assume their cleaning ladies stole, they just lost. But anyway, your cleaning lady, who you know is leaving the country for good, she's going back home next week, goes and offers to sell you this beautiful necklace, which looks exactly like a necklace of your good friend. And she offers it to you for $100. You know this necklace is worth $1,000. So what should you do? Can you buy it?
No.
So exactly. So obviously you shouldn't buy it if there's some other way for your friend to get it back. But, you know, if you have guts, say, let me look at it. And you hold it and you call your friend and say, I have your necklace. But let's say you can't. You're afraid that you don't know what she's going to do if you try that. Exactly. So in that case, buying it might be a form of Hashavas Aveda. Right? The only way you could get help your friend get back her necklace is by buying it, even though you know it's stolen. So that would be a form of Hashavas Aveda. We know the halacha is that when it comes to Hashavas Aveda, the original owner has to pay the finder for any expenses incurred by the finder. Let's say, for example, I lose my chihuahua and you find my chihuahua, but by the time it's been a week and a half, so you do Hashavas Aveda, you give it back to me, but you could charge me for a week's and a half's worth of chihuahua food, right? Hopefully that'll be worth less than the value of the chihuahua. Otherwise you should have sold the chihuahua. So the halacha is you get reimbursed for any expenses that are involved in Hashavas Aveda from the original owner. But it's interesting that that's what the halacha is, that there are times that you would actually go ahead and buy it for that purpose. All right, one last example. You work at a pawn shop, like all good Jews. I was once scholar in residence with Sarah at a shul in Las Vegas. And it's actually an interesting story, relates to business ethics. So we were there for a number of days, and we were giving a bunch of shiurim, so I made a number of topics, and then I figured I'd leave some open and figure what would they want, whatever they would want to hear. Figured that the one thing they wouldn't want to hear in Las Vegas is a shiurim on gambling. But sure enough, I got there, I said, what topics would you like? And the first thing they said was gambling. Okay, so we did a shiur on gambling. It's actually very sad, because there were a lot of people in the shul, so sad, that they had, you know, lived in L.A., they retired from L.A., you know, they sold their house that was worth $1 million, moved to Vegas, bought a house for $150,000, and they figured that they would live off that income for the rest of their life. 2-3 years later, they gambled it all away. You know, they start with, just $50. Anyway, so then the president of the shul asks us, he says, could we do shiur on ribbis? So I asked why ribbis. So I noticed when he picked us up from the airport, he had a big SUV, and the bumper sticker, the license plate, at a vanity plate, it said 8%. So I asked him, what's 8%? He says, I'm a pawnbroker. So he said, yeah, it's a Jewish business. Lots of Jews in pawnbrokering. So I said, 8%, that's pretty fair. So he said, no, it's 8% a month. So anyway, he wanted to learn how to do a heter iska. It's hard to do a heter iska on 8% a month. Back to this. So you're a pawnbroker. Somebody goes in, and she shows you cufflinks, and she says, I'd like to pawn these. And you say, whose are they? She says, they're my husband's. I can't stand them. So I'm trying to pawn them. I'm going to get them much nicer ones. So could you pawn those cufflinks? The answer is you can't. If you suspect that she doesn't have the rishus to sell them to you, let's say her husband likes the cufflinks and didn't give her, so then that would be right, even if they're married. Okay, let's go on. So, as we mentioned before, Oshek is not paying money that you owe. This relates to Parshas HaShavua. The Gemara says, Kol HaKovesh Shchar Sachir Over B'Chamish HaShemos Halalu. Someone who does not pay their workers, a Sachir, who's like an hourly worker, is in violation of 5 Lavin and 1 Aseh. What are they? Bal Tashokes Reacha, Parshas HaShavua, right? It says you may not do Oshek. Bal Tigzol. So the Gemara here assumes that refusing to pay money that you owe is a form of gazel. Bal ta'ashok schir ani, if he's poor. There's an additional lav of oshek for an ani. Bal talin, if you don't pay your workers on time, that's an isser of lo talin, also from this week's parsha. And biyomo titein scharo, that's umishum lo savo alav hashemesh. Wow. So I think that one reason why there are so many lavin that are involved, if you don't pay someone, pay workers, is because this is something that's very commonly done. I know that a number of you are teachers here, so I don't know about the schools that you work in, but it is very common for teachers not to be paid on time. Now, the truth is that very often the schools are not necessarily in violation of these laws, and the reason is because if I don't pay my workers because I don't have any money, so I'm not in violation of these Yisurim. Now, obviously, you should not hire workers if you don't expect to be able to pay them, at least without informing them in advance that you think it's likely that you won't be able to pay them or pay them on time. But otherwise, assuming that you do have the money, then you're over on many, many lavim. And as we see here. Now, we'll get to the details later about when you're over on the isser of paying workers on time. But the reason, again, why the Torah stresses it is it is very common. It is very common in business for people not to pay or not to pay on time or to delay payment because they could get away with it. And cash flow is often an issue. And so you pay everybody a little bit late. Pay everybody a little bit late. So you think that'll help you. So doing something like that, paying somebody late, is a very severe violation. Not paying a doctor's office or the like. All these things are usher according to the Torah. And sometimes it could be oshek, even if the person being cheated doesn't know about it. Let's say I go ahead and I agree to rent your house for $25 a day. And I end up staying an extra day. So I don't pay you for that extra day, so then that's oshek. Even if the owner might not have noticed, or he might not have lost out because he didn't have another tenant anyway. Yes? Either one. So that's going to depend.
Interest rate for teachers and family, and they can bring report, but
yes. So that you're not, if Dina de Malchus Adina says to do something that's against the halacha, you may not follow the Dina de Malchusa. So
you may not follow.
No. In other words, if I go ahead and according to American law, if you don't pay me on time, then I have the right to charge you interest. If I were to sue you for that interest, then I would be over on the Isser of Ribbis. If the Torah says something is Usser, then Dina Machusa can't say it's Mutter, or if it does, you can't ignore it. You can't listen to it. Just like if America made a law that you must eat pork on July 4th. American. So you couldn't eat pork on July 4th, even though there was a law. So the fact is that the Torah says you may not charge interest or you may not pay interest to another Jew. And the fact that America made a law that in this case you have to pay interest doesn't make it mutter. That's like America passing a law that you have to eat pork. You're smiling. I hope.
Yeah. But what if the teachers,
and that's very important, by the way. You know, people have it can come up. Like, let's say your landlord pays interest on your security deposit. That would be a problem. They're legally bound to pay interest. Now, oftentimes that's not a problem because they don't actually pay you interest. They just put your security deposit in the bank and the bank pays interest. But if they paid interest on your security deposit and your landlord was Jewish, you couldn't take that money, even though by law they have to give it to you. So they have to figure out what to do. Okay, so they're violating the halacha without talk to them. What do you mean?
I mean, your school can't talk to them, so the teachers are
there. So in that case, so people are violating the halacha without being aware that they're violating the halacha, so they should be told. But just because they're not aware, it's, you know, you can't feed somebody non-kosher food and not tell them. Still not kosher. Yes. Okay. There's a isser in the Torah called Hamas. You know, like the organization, Hamas. So, Hamas, among other things, means that you can't take somebody something from somebody forcibly, even if you pay them. Right? I go ahead and it's a hot day and you have a nice cool bottle of water, and I take it from you and I say, here's a dollar. That would be Hamas. I took something from you forcibly, even if I pay, that is not permitted. So what about the following? A tzedaka sends me a sefer in the mail with a solicitation, a request to give a donation. So do I have to give them? No, I don't think you have to. Because you didn't ask for it, and the like. If you want to, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. You could try to send it back, but oftentimes that will cost them more money than just keeping it. So you don't have to give in that case. Yes. What? Yeah. I don't see why not. If somebody sends you something like that, then I don't think. And again, if they want it back, in other words, they didn't intend to give it to you, so you should give it back to them. If they were intending to give it to you and hoping to get something in exchange, like a book review or a donation or the like, then you're not obligated to give. Yes. Sub, I can hear. Yeah. So I'm not sure of the case. Somebody's offering you a service for free, and that's because they're hoping to get something in return. So I don't think it's right to take that service if you're not considering buying the product. At least, that's the very least similar to what we said before, which is, you know, asking somebody for something or taking something from somebody that they don't really want to give you. So if you're considering the product, so then it's fine. That's the whole idea of that. That's the whole idea. They're giving you this service for free, hoping that you'll decide to buy it. But if I know for sure I'm not going to buy it. So I don't think, I don't know if it's us or, but I don't think it's right to have them do that whole thing. Now let's say you tell them, yeah, I'm not, you know, they say, oh, would you like a free hand wash? Okay? And you say, no, I'm not interested. I'm sure I don't want to buy it. And they say, you know what? Let us do it anyway. We're sure that, we think that our service is so good that you'll be convinced. So at that point, I don't think you've done anything wrong, even if you're not planning to do it, because that's exactly what they said. They said, we want you to try it, and we're sure, we're taking that risk. We're aware that you right now don't want to do it. So then I don't think it'll be a problem. Yes?
I've personally been to people at these sort of things, and we like once walked by and we're like, oh, come for a free thing, and we stopped, even though all of us were not interested, and one of the people there was like, wow, this is so great, and like, what? Because it's so great.
Right.
I feel like that is
the that's exactly the point.
That's the point, is we want people to
yeah. Yeah, so then absolutely. Exactly the point. I think that's correct. Because if they're marketing it as something like, we want people, even people that think they're uninterested, to try out our product, because we think that, you know, once you try it, or at least 10% of the people that try it will be interested, and there's such a high markup that even if 10% of the people buy it, we'll still make a lot of money. So then, by all means, then I think for sure it's okay to try it, because that's exactly what they want, that's what they're hoping for. And like you said, sometimes it even happens. Yes? I think that's the idea of free samples, that's why I think they're okay. The idea of stores giving out free samples is they're hoping that you'll try it and you'll decide you like it and you'll buy it, so it's okay to try it. So it's a good question. So the halacha is for gneivas das. The Gemara says that to go into a store without intention to buy is gneivas das. Why? Because it gets the guy's hopes up. He's really excited. And if you know you're definitely not buying, you're just curious. So that's wrong. That's a form of gneivas das. That's correct. But I think that's true. I think if you say that to them, for sure it's okay. They say, sure, we don't mind. You're not misleading anybody. There's no false goodwill. And moreover, especially if their attitude is, you might think you're not interested in buying one of these things, but we think that maybe once you try it on, then you'll be interested. So by all means, I don't think in that case anybody's being misled in any way. Okay. Let's do, we'll start with, we'll finish with one last halacha, which very much relates to Hamas, which is the Isser of Lo Sachmod and Lo Sesaveh. So Lo Sachmod, as you know, is one of the Ten Commandments. Lo Sesaveh is in the Aseres HaDibros in the Eschanan. Aseres HaDibros are repeated from Parshas Yisro with some variations, like Zachar V'Shamor. So one of the differences is in Parshas Yisro, which says Lo Sachmod Beis Re'acha, and in Parshas V'Eschanan, it says Lo Saveh Beis Re'acha. What's the difference? So the Gemara explains that Lo Sachmod is that you covet it, but you covet it to such an extent that you take some action to get it, either stealing it or forcing him to sell it to you. Lo Sesaveh is you desire it, you covet it, and you might scheme to somehow get it, but you don't actually take any type of action. So even though you didn't take an action, it's all in your head, still you're in violation of Lo Sesaveh. Now the Ibn Ezra asks a question that many thinkers deal with, which is how could the Torah legislate thoughts and emotions? I understand the Torah could tell me, don't eat chazer, or shake lulav, or something like that. That's an action. How could the Torah tell me not to desire something? That's davar shebelev. So the Ibn Ezra deals with this both in Shmos and in Dvarim, slightly different question in each. And in Sefer Shmos, He writes that mitzvos could be divided up into three categories: mitzvos halev, mitzvos halashon, and mitzvos asei. Mitzvos that relate to thought, emotion, the heart, mitzvos that relate to speech, and mitzvos that relate to action. And with respect to mitzvos halev, he says these could further be divided into two categories, mitzvos asei and mitzvos lo asei. A mitzvos asei shebelev is like ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, or uledavka bo, uliyiras Hashem Elokecha, or this week's parsha, ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. A mitzvos lo asei that relates to emotion is lo sisna sachicha belvecha, lo sikom, lo sitor, also this week's parsha. And another example is lo sachmod. Maybe you should have said lo sisava, but do not covet other people's possessions. So he says, anashim rabim yitmahu alzos ha-mitzvah. People are astounded. Eich yiya adam shelo yachmod davar yafeh belibo. How could a person not desire something beautiful, something attractive? That's human nature. It's human nature. When you see something beautiful, something nice, that you want it. He gives an interesting mashal. Shows. Did we talk about this? I thought I did this with someone, but I don't remember who. Shows that. Oh, I remember who. Okay, good. We didn't do it together. That he hadn't. Seen Aladdin. He says, imagine the following. Dak, ish kfari, a country bumpkin, sheyesh lo das nechona, hu ra'a bas melech, shehi yafa, lo yachmodo sa belibo, sheyishkav ima, ki ada, ki ze lo yitachein. Right? If I go ahead. So, I tried out for the varsity basketball team and I didn't get in. Imagine that. So maybe I would like be jealous of like the star of the yeshiva basketball team, but like I'm not jealous of Michael Jordan. It's not in my league. It's not something that I could even imagine. It's like seeing a bird fly overhead and saying, wow, I'm jealous. I wish I could fly. So the point is that when do you desire something that somebody else has? It's when you think that's shaykh to me. You think that's shaykh to me. So then, you'll want it. You'll desire it. You'll be upset. Why does he have it? And I don't have it. That's not fair. It should be mine. That's lo sachmod. That's lo sisave. But if somebody has internalized that truth, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives everybody everything they need, assuming they do the appropriate ishtadlus. And if you don't have something, so it's because you shouldn't have it. So then, if you really believe it, so of course you won't be jealous of something that belongs to somebody else. It's very interesting. If you look at the Rambam in Pirshei Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah says, Hakina v'ataiva v'akavod motzinas adam in ha'olam. The Rambam writes, these things are mafsid a person's emunah satorah. They cause a person's emunah batar to be depleted, to be lost. So why that's true for taiva is probably because to the extent that a person is misaveh for gashmias, so that takes away from their belief in ruchnias. Another shmuz. And why kina is that way, Volpe explains, is exactly this point. Because a person, kina, is a reflection of a chisaron in emunah. And that's why anybody who goes ahead and cheats or steals or cuts corners in business, it's not just that they're in violation of cheating and stealing and the like, but it's a reflection that they're not ma'aminim. Because if you're a ma'amin, you'll believe that it won't help you, and you already have what you should have, and you're not going to get more by taking something that belongs to somebody else. So that's why the Torah could say don't desire something that belongs to somebody else. Now, of course, if somebody's in a fit of jealousy, so telling them this might not cure their problem like this. As I think I once heard from Rav Tursky, this is an avoda. You have to think about it before you encounter that situation where your jealousy might be aroused. A person has to think about, you know, though things, other people have things that I don't have, that I want. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives me what I should have. And if that's something that a person works on, and it's not easy to work on it, maybe it's easy like with respect to Lamborghinis and the like, but when it comes to things that you really want, it's very difficult not to be jealous at times, especially if they're good things. Especially if they're good things. And what the Ibn Ezra is saying is that if a person wishes not to be jealous, which is definitely hard at times, avoda is to work on emuna, to work on bitachon, to work on the belief, internalizing the belief that a Kaddish Baruch Hu gives us what we should have, and of course we have to do ishtadlos and we have to daven and the like, but ultimately what we should have, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us. I'll conclude with one amazing lashon from, I'm sorry I'm late, from the Medrash Rabbah. Medrash Rabbah says like this, unbelievable. Vayomer Esav bilibo, harishayim birshus liban. Rishayim are in the rishus, in the control of their lave. For example, Vayomer Esav bilibo, Amar Naval, the fool said, bilibo. Amar Esav bilibo, Vayomer Yiravam bilibo, Vayomer Haman bilibo. Aval tzadikim liban bershusa. As the pasuk says, V'chana hine medaberes al liba, not el libo, not bilibo, but al liba. And likewise, Vayomer David el libo, Vayasam Daniel al libo. Dum el liborion, they're like a Kodesh Baruch Hu, as it says, Vayomer Hashem el libo. We sometimes think that emotions are not in our control. These are just things that we feel. We have control of our acts. And when it comes to that, someone who hasn't experienced and seen the extent to which they are free to control their emotions can very easily deny that it's even possible to control one's emotions. But that's ultimately the difference between, like this Medrash says, tzaddikim and rishayim. Are they birshus b'liban or liban birshusan? Again, that's not to say it's easy. It's a lot of work. And there are things that a person could do. Types of, see, struggles with jealousy, the types of exercises that are done in cognitive behavior or psychology are the types of exercises that one could do as well to get over those types of unhealthy emotions. It's a lot of work. But ultimately, we have the power to control these emotions. Okay, so stop here. Bezras Hashem will pick up next week. Pretty soon we're going to get off of the Choshen Mishpat aspect and turn to other workplace halachic questions. Have a good evening. Oh, and just a